So I began looking at Rav Zevin, Ishim V'Shitot, and here on page 53 in his piece on Rav Chaim, he says that Rav Chaim doesn't, and we've made this point I think in the past, he's not fond of using terminology that comes from outside the system. And therefore he doesn't want to use what he calls, Rav Zevin calls, Milot HaHigayon, which I think means philosophical terms. He gives a few examples here. He mentions chiyuv and shlila, meaning positive and negative. He speaks about siba mesovev, cause and effect. These are terms that you won't find in the Shas, and therefore you won't find them in Reb Chaim. Okay, so let's focus a little bit here on chiyuv and shlila, because we've discussed this in the past. So if we don't find anything in Reb Chaim with that language of chiyuv and shlila, we do find it the works of other lamdanim from the same period of time. And here I have in this article by Dr. Solomon, I have here on page 20, you'll see a photocopy of it, a presentation about Chiyuv Vishlila in the name of Rav Elia Bloch. He tells you to find it in a book called Shi'urim al Masechta Bava Basra, and in the footnote he tells you Krach Aleph Amud 70. Again, I would assume that we could get access to this sefer, or maybe if we do some word searching in the original, you know, thesis, maybe he has it fleshed out a little. Because here he jumps in the middle; he doesn't even tell you what Rav Bloch is talking about. So again, Rav Bloch was Rosh Yeshiva in Telz and ultimately in Cleveland, and Mazaim Latorah, which is a fantastic work on Chumash. I think the case that he's dealing with, I'm just guessing, is a Rambam in Hilchas Chametz Umatzah. The Rambam says that you don't get Malkus for Bal Yeroh Bayi Motzah. It's a Lav She'en Bo Maisa, but if you buy Chametz on Pesach, you do get Maisa, you do get Malkus. In other words, it becomes a lav sheyesh bo maisa, so to speak, meaning he does an action, and there he gets, and therefore he gets malchus. Oh, let me just now. There's a gemara in Masechta Brachos, which is a very famous gemara, that if a person is in violation of a losaseh, then despite the principle called kovod abrios, let's say for example he's in the middle of the marketplace and he realizes that he's wearing chatneys, is poshto afilu b'shuk, he has to take it off because he cannot violate a losaseh even for the sake of kovod abrios. What about the case of someone who is wearing a beged without tzitzis? In this case, we're not going to force him to take off the beged because he's not dealing with a violation of a losaseh, but rather an essay of tzitzis. And we have a principle called Gadol Kovod Abriya Shedoche Essay Bekum B'Shevi Altaseh, but not Bekum V'aseh. So the question is, now he's wearing a beged that doesn't have tzitzis. Is that really called Shevi Altaseh? Again, the reason why we're discussing this issue is because in the context of chiyuvi and shlili, we're going to see a violation of a losaseh with an action that's considered chiyuvi in the language of Rav Bloch. Chiyuvi means it's a positive, active violation of the losaseh, and therefore, in the case of chametz, ownership of chametz through an action is a violation of a losaseh, and that's called chiyuvi, and that generates malchus. The question is, if you cannot override kovod abrios for the sake of a kum va'aseh, in other words, if you're violating the Torah in an active way, we'll call it chiyuvi, then we say Ein chachma vein tvuna keneged Hashem, and therefore you have to avoid that at all costs, even forfeiting kovod abrios. Therefore, the question is, in the case where he's wearing a beged in public and it has four corners and he has no tzitzis on it, so lechora, that's the question that I think Rav Bloch is addressing here. This is an active violation of the mitzvah of tzitzis. Why is it active? Well, walking around with it, I'm not sure if that's active, but he put on the beged. The levisha itself should, in other words, just like ownership over chametz is passive, there's no active chiyuvi, but if he buys the chametz, that's called chiyuvi. Then wearing a beged without tzitzis is not chiyuvi, right? It's inactive, it's passive, but if he put on the beged, that should be the action. Meaning, where a blach is trying to understand, if I get the point here, is what's the difference between actively violating by a matzah by purchasing chametz, and actively violating the mitzvah of tzitzis by putting on a beged without tzitzis. In both cases, the ultimate goal is achieved by an action. And yet the Gemara considers this case of tzitzis, of a beggar without tzitzis, to be shevi al taseh, excuse me, and therefore exempting him from taking off the beged. Whereas the Rambam is going to tell us that buying chametz on Pesach incurs malchus. So wait, just give me a minute to see if I can get the point here. Again, I'm working here with in a very handicapped way because I don't have the original source. Comes along Rav Bloch, again, from what I can gather from here, and he's saying the following. There's a difference between a lav and an essay. He says the following. The lav itself is basically chiyuvi. A person is violating the will of God. That violation is called chiyuvi. However, under normal circumstances, for example, in the case of Bali Rabbi Yimotze, he violates the will of God inactively. So that the lav was violated because he owns chametz, but he didn't buy chametz. He did no action to own the chametz. If he does an action, then in the case of a lav, because the lav per se, in and of itself, is a violation, it is what we call chiyuvi. Again, we have a technical problem here because we can't give malchus without a maisa. If he achieves that chiyuvi state of violating the law through a maisa, then Rav Bloch holds we can give him malchus for that. But an essay, by its very definition, he says, is a shevi al taseh, meaning the violation of the will of God is an inactive violation. It's an essay. It's the absence of a kiyum an essay. And even if he goes ahead and he does an action by wearing the beged, putting on the beged, says Rav Bloch, that's not called chiyuvi, because he's not actively violating the essay. The violation of the essay is the fact that he doesn't have tzitzis on. The Torah tells you to do an action. The absence of doing that action, the absence of the fulfillment, is the bittul essay. The violation of the essay is always, by definition, the inaction. So even though you achieve the state of inaction of bittul essay through an action, but that action itself is not the bittul essay. Let me just read to you his language. He says, "Beged shel arba kanfis lelo tzitzis." He says, im, I think, which means af, im shehu chiyuvi lefi tivo. Again, the language is very very coarse, very heavy. It means, even though I have to grant you that he does a positive act b'mitzius lefi tivo, and as in reality he is wearing the beged, nechshav lefi adin kishlili. It's nevertheless considered the absence of an action. Why is it the absence of an action? Because the Torah commands you to put on the tzitzis. If you don't put on the tzitzis, that's called an inaction. Any bittul essay, by definition, is shlili. It's not chiyuvi. And therefore, we can allow him to push for kavod abrios, right? That kavod abrios now wins out because it's considered inaction. He puts on this beged, and the levisha itself should be considered an action. So Rav Bloch wants to argue that we go back to the original source. The original source is the Torah commands you to be mekayim Hashem's will by wearing a beged with tzitzis. Wearing a beged without tzitzis is, by definition, a passive state in which you did not fulfill the act actively the will of God. It always remains shevi al taseh. So, in a certain sense, I think what Rav Bloch is saying is that if you isolate the moment that he puts on this beged that doesn't have tzitzis on it, that's not the bittul aseh. The Bittul Aseh is the fact that there is no tzitzis on the Beged. Right, because the Torah says, put on the tzitzis on the Beged, or wear the Beged with tzitzis, whatever it is. So, in a sense, the Levisha itself might be a means to an end, but that never is the violation. In the case of a lav, I can always ask the question, did I violate God's will in an active way, or did I do it in a passive way? And if I did it actively in a case of a lav, then that's considered an active violation of the will of God for which I incur malchus. But in the case of a losa, it's always by definition going to be inactive, because the Torah is going to say that if this action put you into a state of being in which you're obligated to fulfill the will of God, and you did not, you failed to do so, that's considered passive. Alan?
That helps me ask the question even better, actually. That's finished. By that definition, number one, what happens if he's wearing the tzitzis and he rips them off? There's an active thing that is actually resulting in
again, even if he rips off the tzitzis, or if I take a lulav and I rip it to shreds, right? Even so, the action is only a means to an end. The ultimate violation here is ikium, is the passive state in which he didn't take the lulav, or he didn't wear the beged. And therefore, Rav Bloch says that in the case of an essay, no matter how he goes about violating the essay, even if his bittul essay is b'maisa, it's always considered by different shevialtas. It's always the absence of something rather than something positive.
But how is that different than buying chametz on Pesach?
But in the case of a lav, what is the Torah saying? The Torah is saying, don't violate the will of God. The Torah is not saying go ahead and do something. The Torah is saying don't do something. Now you can don't do something in two different ways. You can don't do something b'shevi altaso or b'kum vaseh. If you do it b'kum vaseh, then you violated the will of God b'kum vaseh. The fact that in 99 out of 100 cases you violate the will of God and violate the law b'shevi altaseh, that doesn't in any way impact on that 1% chance where you violated the will of God actively. I think there's a very profound idea here. What boggles my mind is, would Reb Chaim accept this kind of approach?
Can I do this in English? Finish now.
Follow up part of the thing, which was my original question.
But I just want to say this: when you ask questions, you have to tell me whether you're asking on Berzon, you're asking on Reb Bloch. Meaning?
Okay, I'm not asking on you.
No. I just want to know, this is crucial to me, I photocopied the pastry, maybe I should have made more copies, but do you agree that that's what he says, first of all? Meaning, I might be misrepresenting him. As I said, I don't have the original source here. It's just two lines of an abstract, you know. And so again, if you're asking questions on Berzon, that's one thing, you know, and then you're saying, Rabbi Berzon, with all due respect, that's not what the man is saying. And then we could fight that out. If, on the other hand, you're agreeing that that's what he says, then you're asking a question on Rav Bloch, and then I have to try to defend Rav Bloch. You know, you hear the difference between the two. You know,
actually,
who's on the stand now? You know,
this question is not asking either on you or on Rav Bloch. Yeah. I want to understand together a little better. Is that when there's a meaning of Kavya Brios,
right?
Are you allowed, and you're allowed to take it off for that reason, because it's not a case where you can't take it off.
No, you're allowed to continue wearing it.
Yeah, it's a beetle I say.
I think we have a page somewhere, Sam. Am I right?
Yeah.
So,
come on, just grab a chair. Yeah?
So, if you have a choice to correct the situation without the taking Sheva Tase as a way to do it, Is that the preferred way? In other words,
that's very... The first question you have to ask yourself, is there Kavod Abrius?
Yeah, no, I'm assuming there is.
In other words, only option is to walk around naked in Rishon Rabbah, and that's a Kavod Abrius issue.
Right, let's say he's wearing a beggar without tzitzis.
Right.
Okay. If he wants to take the choice of taking the tzitzis off, take it off,
right,
which is a problem of covered up brios, or he could cut the corner so there's no longer chayiv in tzitzis. Would he be required to do that? In other words,
I don't think so. I don't think he has to go ahead and destroy his beged. I think if the halacha right now is that his bittul asay is called shevi al taseh, which is Rav Loch's contention, then God will cover abrius. Then cover abrius takes place. I don't know. Once you have covered abrius, I mean, you're asking sort of like a hutra d'chuya kind of question.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, is covered abrius the last resort? Or is the covered abrius trumps even, you know,
I would say the following, that covered abrius in a sense removes the bittul esse. And once you remove the bittul esse, I don't know if you have to do somersaults in the air to figure out a way of removing the chiyuv esse, you know.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
But again, that's the sugya in brachas. I think it's on Rachof on Mitbeis. Again, he doesn't quote it. Sam, you wanted to say something before.
I just want to just reify that I understand Rabbi Balach's point. Okay, so it's not asking on you. I think I understood. And that is that when you, the Isser is not to own chametz. So you can own chametz because it just happens to be sitting in your property, or you can own chametz by getting it. So in that case, you're violating owning actively.
Right.
Whereas,
in the case of a beggar chain boat sitzes,
the chiyuv is never you shouldn't have something. The chiyuv is always put the
tzitzis. Exactly, beautiful.
So even if I put the beggar on without the tzitzis, my chiyuv is not you shouldn't do that. The chiyuv is
if the Torah would have prohibited you from wearing a beggar without tzitzis, it would be the case of chametz.
That's right, that's
and then if you wore the beggar by putting it on,
now I'm putting it, when I put it on without it, I just engendered a chiyuv of putting on the tzitzit, but never was I told,
correct,
don't do what you do.
Excellent. So I think what Rav Loch, if you accept his thesis, and
it sounds
I think it's very profound. If you accept his thesis, then what Rav Loch is doing for us is the following. He's saying, take off your glasses, meaning don't look at things the way they appear to your physical eyesight. We have an eye doctor here, so I got to be careful what I say. But if you look at it physically, then in both cases, Ribbono Shel Olam, he's doing an action. Whether he's buying chametz by going to his local bakery shop, or whether he is putting on this beged, he's actively involved, ba'ofen chiyuvi, bekum va'aseh, in violating wills Hashem. Comes along Rav Loch and he says, no. Take off your physical glasses. Look at it in a very abstract way. Ask yourself, what's the difference between a lotas and an essay? In other words, now we're not looking at the reality of how he violated the essay, how he violated the losas, but rather we're going back to the source, to the original. When the original abstract definition here, we set up two categories. One category is called a losas, and the other category is an essay. A losas is called chiyuvi. The Torah says, don't do it, and you did it. Did you do it with an action or not? That's a secondary issue. But first, define the losas. An essay means, don't avoid or passively omit a fulfillment of God's will. If it's a passive omitting of God's will, I don't care whether you do it b'mais or you do it b'shevi altas. It's always considered shevi altas. It's a very profound idea. Do you understand how much of a chiddush this is? Yes, Sam.
Do you mind running to losuch alas alam for this?
Losuch alas alam. If according to Rav Bloch, I could violate losuch alas alam actively. Again, I'm not sure exactly how you do that, because
I
don't know about walking away. I think the decision that you made, you know, not to pick it up, is the violation of the law. So again, you know, every case, you're right, has to be dealt with. But I think if lo yitzur, walking away is considered a violation of losuch alas alam, well, closing my eyes,
I know why, kicking the aveda into the nar.
Right. So in that case, you know, again, I think Rav Bloch would say you're not chayav malchus for that case. Again,
I'm not talking about malchus, but I'm saying
I just said
let's say, so now because then you're doing it. It says don't avoid. So usually you avoid by not doing anything.
Right, but I think you're avoiding. You know, in the case of chametz, you're establishing your ownership. That's a violation of the will of Hashem.
I'm owning actively.
Right. But I don't think it's an avoidance. You know, in the case of avoidance, meaning if I avoid Hashavas Aveda, at the end of the day, that's called Shevi Al Tase, even though it's a Lo Tase.
Even though, but let's say if I do it literally, I kick the Aveda away. Right? I kick it into the Nar. So now, his almost is not through not doing, not through
right.
passive.
Right, but again, I still think that even though you kicked it away, the violation itself is avoidance. What Rav Bloch is looking for is a lo sase which although I do it passively, I am creating a violation of the will of God. Not that I'm avoiding the will of God, but I'm violating the will of God. And I don't know if walking away is anything more than avoidance. So look, Rabbi, what I'd love to do if I had the wherewithal is to get a hold of the original. Again, Sam, it could be that in the thesis itself, because this is an abstract, maybe he fleshes it out more. But the real way of doing this, like I said in the case of Rabbi Berman, the real way of doing it is to look inside. We have a whole slew of hakiris that we haven't been able to research because we don't have access to the right sources. We have Rav Gusman and Kiddushin. I don't have Rav Gusman and Kiddushin. And as I say, this is like the challenge, the frustration. Now, what I want to know today, this is my question for today, does Reb Chaim operate with the concepts of positive and negative, of chiyuvi and shlili? Now, what I need to say is you won't find the lingo, you won't find Reb Chaim as we find in Reb Bloch where he says, Hu chiyuvi avalafi adin shlili nechshav kishlili. That language you'll never find in Reb Chaim. But perhaps what you would find is that conceptual distinction between positive and negative. So I have here a copy of Reb Chaim on the table for you. I have my own copy here on my table. And I'd like you to start on page 111, okay, well, you know what? We'll call it Kuf Yud Aleph. I'm pretty sure you have the same print as me.
Where is that?
Well, we didn't photocopy it, so I'll try to get you a photocopy, Harvey, a little bit later on, believe me, if you can remind me, because I tend to get distracted. Okay. The Rambam Shita in Perek Chaf, Mehilchas Edus, Halacha Beis, is that the halacha of kasher zomam below kasher asa applies to misa and not to malchus. So let's go through it. Two Edom testify that Reuven is chayv misa, for whatever reason. Now two other Edom come and amazim them imanu ayisem. So it depends. If Reuven, the accused, is still alive, then we'll kill the two Edom, the Edom zomam. If Reuven has already been put to death, then the Edim are, so to speak, off the hook, whatever that means. But we certainly don't put them to death. That's called Kasher Zomim Velo Kasher Os. However, if the Edim, who became later Zomim, testified against Reuven that he's Chayev Malkus, I can't say he was wearing a beggar of Shatnas in Rosh Hashanah, and Bezdin went ahead and they implemented that Chiyuv Malkus, that Onish Malkus, and they gave Reuven Malkus, and then it was Hazoma. The Rambam says in that case we will give the Edom Zomim Malkus, and we don't apply the principle of Kasher also. And the Ravid goes ballistic, as you could imagine. And Reb Chaim dedicates about a page to try to defend the Shitas HaRambam. So the first approach of Reb Chaim is very fascinating. And you may remember that one of our maftechos, I'm not sure if Sam you were around then, was Maisa Alpidin and Maisa Dini and Maisa Befal, meaning Bemitzius, meaning sometimes you do an action that's a physical action, but it's not a Kiyum HaMitzvah, or it's not a violation of an Avera. And here Reb Chaim, I think, utilizes that mafteach. And he says the following. In Malkus, there's a halacha of Bifnei Bezdin, which means that the Malkus has to be implemented by Bezdin. But it goes beyond that, says Reb Chaim. Not only does it have to be implemented by Bezdin, but the requirements of Bezdin here include all the conditions and the prerequisites for giving malchus. Let's say, for example, a Beis Din would grab somebody and give malchus for whatever reason. That would not be malchus. Says Rav Chaim that when Beis Din meted out malchus to Reuven based on the testimony of the Edim Zomimim, they thought they were implementing the din as the halacha of the verdict requires, because their verdict was based on these two Edim. However, now that we find out that the Edim are Edim Zomimim, then Iglai Milsil Mafreya, what we know now is that Beis Din wasn't functioning in their capacity as Beis Din, because they were relying on the testimony of two Edim that plagiarized, that perjured themselves. And Rav Chaim calls that Chavos Bi'alma. Interesting phrase that I think Rav Chaim invented here in this context. And therefore, says Rav Chaim, which you'll see on the bottom right, the imhil koshal lo b'fnei Beis Din ein ze malchus klal. That's about 10 lines up from the bottom. And therefore, lo miftar b'hachi, we cannot apply the principle of kasher zoman v'lo kasher asa, unless it was kasher asa al yedei Beis Din, that Beis Din meted out the punishment. But here, since ulefiz enirikisha huzmu ha'edim igloi milsa d'lo asa v'lo klum, meaning that this Reuven was not guilty of any crime, lo nischayiv malchus me'olam, imkein ha'nimtza, di'ein ala malchus din maisa Beis Din klal. Because again, what we said was that kasher osa means kasher osa al yidei Beis Din, with a maisa Beis Din. There's no maisa Beis Din in this case. And it's as if somebody gave malchus to this nebuch nidon, to this accused outside of Beis Din. And therefore, lo chashiv su osa in quotation marks, right? Keva dahavi kamo chavola b'yalma.
So this key point is that it has to be b'fnei Beis Din, and by misa there's no halacha b'fnei Beis Din. And if you do it illegally, it's not called b'fnei.
Oh, so where does he speak about misa? He says v'lo damya malchus. You're ahead of me, maybe a little bit. He says v'lo damya malchus l'misa u'mamim. The hasam are lo be'inin shakiyum yia be'Beis Din dafka. V'im kein afagav diachkach igloy milsa lo havi b'chuyiv misa u'mamim. Vigloy milsa gamze, the ain ala misa din misas Beis Din v'al moment din tashlumin. I will call ze who rak mishum de chasalo achiv shel hamisa bezeh ha'ika gzeres hakosuv de mikri asa de bahachi ha'iri kro de zomam lasos v'lo asa. Tibakai Gavna, the Osal P A the Sheker Mikri Osa Umifta Mashenke Malkus Dispay Din Misuyam the Gama Kium Vasia de Malkus Sarklios Bifne Beis Din. Okay, you have to know a lot of halachas here. For example, what happens if Beis Din came to a certain verdict and then the Nidon ran away and then outside of Beis Din they killed him? I mean, these are sugyas in Masechta Makis. So there is no din of kium ha asiyah bifnei Beis Din. There's only a din of psak Beis Din. But in malchus is another additional requirement of kium ha malchus al yidei Beis Din, bifnei Beis Din. And here b'shehuzmu nimtza dechaser din kium malchus al yidei Beis Din, the butler din malchus, because is chavolos bi'alma. We find out retroactively that they didn't have the goods on him. They didn't have the evidence on him.
No, but I think even by regular moment and by regular misa, there's no fear of it happening from a bezin. If the decree is that you pay, you can pay outside of bezin.
Right, okay, but moment is a different discussion, but misa, let's focus on misa.
I don't know if the bezin has to be present at this.
Right, that's what he's saying. That's exactly his point. Rav Chaim is saying that in the case of malchus, is a separate din, that bezin has to be present and they have to implement the malchus as a bezin. But in the other case of misa, the misa is kasher asa, even if there was a psak of Beis Din, b the nidon ran away from Beis Din, and c he was killed outside of Beis Din. There's no din that Beis Din has to oversee the onesh, and therefore it's already kasher asa. But the Rambam holds that in the case of malchus, there's no kasher asa, because kasher asa means al yedei asiyas Beis Din, and here Beis Din wasn't functioning as a Beis Din; it was chavolas bi'alma.
Was that true? What if it was a man who was nidon lemisa, and he ran away, and before Beis Din could get him, he walked across the street and was hit by a car and killed?
Okay, so that might be something different. I don't know if that's kasher also, but let's say, for example, the Gol Adam kills him, or whatever it might be. All right, look, Alan, no, again, you'll have to go through this piece. I just want to get to a certain point here, and I want to try to prove, not the mafteach of, you know, Hamaisa Dini as opposed to Hamaisa B'Metzius. I want to get to the point where I can prove that Reb Chaim is operating with positive and negative, with Chiyuvi and Shlili. And that's what I have to try to prove. Oh. Says Reb Chaim in the paragraph that starts Ella, Dulafize Tikshe. Reb Chaim says my answer is too good to be true. Why? Because im kein gam kasher zomam lo mishkachas klal bi eidus shel malchus. He says then you could never have a case of kasher zomam in eidus shel malchus. Kevin de lo yuchal liskayim bo klal din malchus. Im kein olecha gam zomam lasos klal malchus. He's saying if my thesis is correct, then I've completely undermined the halach of kasher zomam with regard to malchus. Because the kasher zomam means that he was zomam for an asiyah. And there could have been an Asiya, just we caught him before the Asiya, but now we're saying that there never could be an Asiya. And therefore there's no kasher zomam lasos. The pasuk has to be read in its complete form. The asisim lo kasher zomam lasos. That there was a zomam of lasos. And why? And for example, in Ben Grushim and Chalutza, the Gemara says that we're going to give Malkus, meaning there is a kiyum of kasher zomam in Malkus. And the question is, how do you get to that kiyum? To bedin kasher zomam, how do you get to this din of Malkus? Oh. So now Reb Chaim suggests a slightly different approach to the Rambam. Again, he's still basing himself on his original breakthrough, but in a whole different way. Ela debeikar hach dina de darshinan kasher zomam lasos velo kasher osa yesh li ayin, which most of the gedolim in Reb Chaim's time would have said yesh lachkar. Okay, he says yesh la ayin. Im hamiutu, this exclusion of kasher osu al shenasebo, we're turning the page here, nasebo ha'onesh. Why do we exclude azoma here? Because the onesh was implemented, right? That's the way, I guess, intuitively we would have explained it. Oh, or perhaps the ikar hachdina, this din, this miut of kasher zom lo kasher osa, the kevan de nasebo ha'onesh, shuv lo havi od zomam lasos. Again, what he's saying here is that it's not a din of the onesh, meaning because it was kasher asa. That's why the ptur of zomim here of hazomim is not because according to the first side. Again, let's go back to the first side of Reb Chaim, which I think is the poshut side. The ptur of kasher zomim lo kasher asa is because of the kasher asa. The kasher asa itself is the ptur. And then we have the question, well, in Einim Zomim, since they're falsifying their testimony, there's never really a kasher asa, because you need Bezdin, and it's always going to be Shalom if they Bezdin. Then we're back to square one with our original question. Oh, and here's the more exciting approach. Reb Chaim wants to say it's not the positive kiyum of kasher asa that patters it. Oh, the ikar achdina who the kevan de nasebo haonesh shuv lo havi od zomam lasos. Meaning, the Torah says the precondition for the parish of kasher zomam, it's got to be a zmama. He planned and he schemed, but he never succeeded in achieving his goal. That's called zomam. Right? But in a case where it was already
achieved
right, he achieved
it. Achieved.
Well, wait, let's go slowly, Rabosa, really. You know, it's not fair. This is, you know, you got to have a little Rachmanis on an Alta Yid here. I'm working very hard to try to understand what Reb Chaim is saying, okay? Oh, the Iker Hach Dinahu, the Kevan de Nasebo, on a Shuv Lo Havi Od Zolam Lasos. Again, it's not that we have all the elements in place and all the conditions are checked off, and we can now apply the parasha of Hazama. But there's a din that if Bezdin implemented the Onesh, that patters up the Edim. No. We're lacking in the very precondition for which the Torah punished the Edim. What's the precondition? What generates the punishment of the Edim Zomimim? It's the Zmama. As long as it's called a Zmama, if I can describe it as a Zmama, then I can implement the punishment of Kasha Zoma. Right? But if on the other hand, Nasa Boha Onesh, then forget about the Onesh itself, but rather the Zmama is no longer a Zmama. Zmama is only a Zmama. Again, this is counterintuitive, it's sort of paradoxical, but the Zmama for which he's chayav is because it was a Zmama and nothing more than a Zmama. If it exceeds beyond a Zmama, I think that's what Reb Chaim is saying, then maybe, you know, Einon Shemin Adin, you know, he's even more guilty of a crime, because not only did he have a scheme and a plan, but he even succeeded in achieving his goal, and he killed the guy was killed as a result of his Zmama. No, the Torah says, we're not going to be mechayav you in such a case. You know, you belong to a different category. Maybe you're a rotzeach, but you're a rotzeach begrama, and we can't put you to death, but you're not an eid zomim. The eid zomim is chayav misa for zmama. And he says, kevan deleka zomam lasos, al kein niftarei ha'edim. Once it leaves the realm of zomam lasos, it's no longer Vasisim Lokasha Zoma. Just give me a few minutes, or both, just to see if I understood Reb Chaim correctly. Again, I have one line in Reb Chaim, and I'm really trying to understand what Reb Chaim is saying. Ulefi Zeh, maybe we'll understand Reb Chaim and see how he fears us. Im Neima, if we'll say, the Ein Etzem Haptur Shala Edim Zomim Mishum Asa. Right, it's not because Bezdin implemented the punishment, and the punishment itself patters up the Edim. El Mishum, Deha Asa Gorem Shalo Yeshuv, Zomam Lasos, Im Kain, Tzorech Lios, Dekemo, Shebehadin, Dezomam Lasos. Now, what does it mean, Zomam Lasos? What's a Zomam Lasos? I mean,
it was an undertaking, but not a fulfillment.
Right, but zomam, how can you call it zomam lasos if asiya is a halachic concept? Then there's no zomam lasos here, because there never could be an asiya. The edus itself is false edus. Is daininon? It must be that we treat it ki ilu haisa edusam emes. That the zomam means we're going to say, well, if I would have granted you that their edus is true. Right, then they were zomem to implement a certain punishment for the nidon, kmochein gam bi asa, and so too in the case where Bezin actually implemented the punishment. Ika hach zeres hakosuv the dainan ilu hoisa edusam emes. Let's judge their zmama as if they were telling the truth. Kavan the Ain Zedin Asa. Now I'm not sure what those words mean. Kavan the Ain Zedin Asa. Rak Bitul the Zomam Lasos.
Yeah, it never agreed was Asa, because it was never done according to the rules of.
Okay, but gam bittel zmama de zomam lasos leinyan zomam lasos are daininan kimo shahaisa idusam emes. In other words, when the Torah finds them guilty, it's within the context of what did they want to achieve? Had their under the false assumption that their edus was emes and kain gam bittel hazomam. So to the flip side, we want to say, well, they overstepped their bounds, they're no longer within the framework of Zomam. Daininan ki'ilu keva de'ilu haisa idusam emes ein zimumam od lasos. It's no longer Zomam lasos, because if the edus was emes, now it's already asa. Al kein shuv lekabuhu hach de Zomam lasos umifteri. V'nira dechein hidas. Alright, okay, fine. Now he goes back to the Raivid, but does he come out? Of a Rambam sover, da hamitrei dinim, de bahachiyuv de kasha zomam, as linan basar edusam kemosha haisa emes. correct? Ule inyan haptur di asa beinon asiya mamish. Valkeimbe malchus delonase bo malchus mamish. Again, he's going back to his first thesis that it's only chavol of the alma shape mikri kasher zomam velo kasher asa. Notice the kasher asa says the Rambam. That's the chiddush. The Rambam has to be an asiya mamish, and there was no asiya mamish here because it was a false testimony. As far as being mechayiv and betoras kasher zomam, there we look at their scheme as if it were edus emes. Ve'alkein chayovim ha'edim zom b'chol gavnei af b'shekfar hulka zeh she'idu olav. Why? Because from the perspective of the kasher zom of the aid, if we define it as edus emes, then they achieved their goal. Through their edus emes, Beis Din actually implemented the punishment of kasher asa. Just one second. What's the Rambam Shita? That in the case of Malkus, in the case of Malchus, they are chayev. Right, okay. So again, there are two different cases, and I'm sorry I confused them. In case number one, the Edim wanted to be mechayev the Nidon Malchus, and Beis Din did nothing, and then there was Hazoma. In such a case, the Edim are chayev Malchus. That's called kasher Zoma. Correct? There was no kasher Osa. From this perspective, where's the kasher zomam? After all, it's a false testimony. It can never lead to kasher asa. So why is it lasos? There's no lasos here. And for Reb Chaim, we're going to analyze the kasher zomam lasos from the perspective of edus emes. We're going to lay down the premise ki'ilu the edus was emes, and therefore it's kasher zomam lasos that within the framework of their zomama they wanted to implement a valid malchus, right? Because they wanted their edus to be accepted as emes, and we're going to grant them that allowance as if their edus was emes, and then we're going to hit them with the books and apply kasher zoma. Oh. But now, what happens with the kasher asa? So here Reb Chaim says that when it comes to kasher asa, which is now going to be mafkia the chiyuv edim zomimim, we need a kasher asa mamish. Mamish meaning in objective terms. The asiya actually happened. And here's the difference between Malchus and the other punishments. In the case of Malchus, since he gloyed milsa that Beis Din wasn't involved, there wasn't a maisa Beis Din, therefore there never was an asa. And therefore, you cannot apply the p'tur of kasher asa because there never was an asa. We go back to be mechayvim for the kasher zomam lasos, mash enkein in the cases of misa and mom. Yeah, Sam, go ahead. Now I think I'm a little bit oriented.
I got totally messed up because I thought for a while that what you might be dealing with kasher zomam veloy, in other words, that it has to remain zomam till the very end, and once they did what they did, they're no longer plotting. So I thought you just extended the timeline, not for the past, but Zomam when they said
it. Except Malchus.
So that's where Reb Chaim introduces the Tzvei Dinim here. That's the last seven lines.
No, I was on the wrong line.
So wait a minute, let's just review the Tzvei Dinim of Reb Chaim and see if we can make any sense out of it. Reb Chaim is saying that the word Asa takes on two different meanings. If the word asa is coming to describe the kasher zomam, it's an addendum or a description, an adjective of kasher zomam lasos, that's the asa that we're talking about, then we look at it from the perspective of edus emes. What they wanted to do was fawn or seduce the Beis Din into believing that they were telling edus emes so that a certain asiya would be implemented. That's enough to be machayev them. Correct? Oh, now we have a p'tur that removes that chiyuv, and that's called kasher asa, when Beis Din actually implemented that punishment. Says Reb Chaim, the kasher asa, in order to undermine the kasher zomam and be mafkir the chiyuv of the edim, that has to be a kasher asa in objective, real terms, meaning according to the laws of Beis Din. And here's where herein lies the distinction between Malchus and the other punishments. In Malchus, Vibalt is a separate halach of what? Of Bifnei Beis Din. And now we find out that this Malchus was not Bifnei Beis Din. That's not a kasher asa. And if it's not a kasher also, we go back to square one and we're going to be machayev the Eid and Malkus b'toras kasher zona. Ah, you'll ask me if there was never a kasher also. So how is it lasos? Why was this zmama lasos? The answer is, when I'm using the lasos as a description of his zmama, meaning he had in his mind a plan to deliver a certain punishment, meet out a certain punishment to Ploni the Ninon, from that perspective, we look at it as if, theoretically, it would have been Eidus Emes, what would this aid, the Eidim, what would they have achieved? They would have achieved a Kasher Asa. And since they would have achieved the Kasher Asa, according to their understanding of it, they are guilty and culpable under the law of Vasisam Lo Kasher Zom Lassus Liyokhiv. However, when we want to be mafkia that chiyuv, that's already a different din. You want to say it was already kasher asa, and the Torah says once it's kasher asa, the edim are off the hook? No. For that, we need a kasher asa in objective terms. We have to know if Bezdin actually meted out that punishment. In the case of Malchus, there's never a kasher asa. So you'll ask me, if there's never a kasher asa again, why, if Bezdin hadn't implemented the Malchus, we would assume that he gets Malchus? So the answer is because it's a kasher zomam lasos, because he really wanted to have an asiyah, even though that an asiyah could never actually be achieved within the framework of false edus. Now, Rabosai, again, what I want to take 2 minutes of your time is to see, is Reb Chaim actually operating within the perspective of this chakira called chiyuvi and shlili? What I'm trying to suggest is the following, and hear me out and then reject what I want to say if you feel that it's not sensible. What I'm trying to say is the following, that under Reb Chaim's first definition of a lo kasher asa, the asa is the implementation of Bezdin. I call that chiyuvi. Let me explain. In the second side of Reb Chaim is not saying that there's some new ptur. Reb Chaim is asking, is it kasher zomam or is it not kasher zomam? And the asa is going to define and qualify whether it is kasher zomam. In effect, when it was asa, let's say for example when Bezdin put the nidon to death, then in that case it's mafkir the kasher asa. I'm sorry, it's mafkir the kasher zomam. Poshet, you don't have a kasher zomam. Do you hear those words? You don't have a kasher zomam. In the first definition of Chaim, you have a kasher zomam. But there's a new din that the Torah was poter. I'll give you an example. When we speak about a poter, you're talking about a positive force. We discussed this yesterday with regard to Shutfus Akum, with regard to Digun Akum. There's the Bailus and Shutfus of an Akum. That's a positive force. Here also, in Reb Chaim's first definition, which is on the top of the page, the onesh itself is a poter. And Reb Chaim's language is Miftarei Ha'edim. Miftarei is what I call a kumva say a poter. O Dilman, Reb Chaim's second definition, we're not talking about a poter. What we're talking about is a chisaron, a head there, the absence of that which would generate a chiyuv, namely a kasher zoma. And once it reaches the level of kasher asa, again according to his plan, his scheme, then the aid is off the hook because he's already achieved the kasher asa and it's no longer kasher zoma. Again, it's the absence of the chiyuv rather than a poter. That's what I think Reb Chaim is offering.
I hear exactly what you're saying. I just have a tangent. Okay, I have a bad taste in my mouth about the notion that regarding kasher zomam, we consider it as if they said, I don't understand that game. As if they were saying Emes and they really plotted to do an actual Malkus rather than a Chavala.
Again, first you have to empathize with Reb Chaim's problem.
No, I fully understand.
Well, let me try. I'm talking to myself, Sam.
Okay.
I want to empathize with Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim is saying that there's a paradox here. Because what you're telling me is that the Rambam says that kasher asa doesn't apply in case of Malkus because that's not asa, because it's legally not an asa. So Reb Chaim now has a problem. If the legality of the asa defines the asa, then in general, there's no such thing as kasher zomam lasos in Malkus, because it's a false testimony. If it's a false testimony, it'll never be Malkus. So how can you talk about zomam lasos? The answer is, says Reb Chaim, the lasos is defining the kasher zomam. Again, if I would give it philosophical, speculative philosophical terms, I would say like this. The Torah wanted to get this aid punished because of his scheming. And within, you know, if we enter into the mind of his scheming, we can ask ourselves the following question. Was he a schemer or was he a doer? And paradoxically, the Torah is going to say that if he was a doer, if he's happy and satisfied, you know, like the fox that ate the fish, and you see a big smile on the fox's face, if he's happy because he achieved his goal, then the Torah paradoxically says he's off the hook. Because the Torah wanted to be mechayev him for the kasher zomam. So on a philosophical level, Reb Chaim says it doesn't matter one iota whether the kasher asa that this aid wanted to achieve was technically, legally, halachically, an asa with all the chal shem asa, or whether it was an asa in the sense that from his perspective his zamama came to fruition.
His zamama came to fruition only in terms of physical reality, but not in terms of malchus.
Again, because your definition of malchus is a halachic definition of malchus, but now I'm using the malchus or the misa or the mammon as a barometer to judge the kasher zaman. It's a whole different story, says Reb Chaim. When you talk about kasher also as an entity unto itself, which is Reb Chaim's first side, that the asiya of Bezdin patters up the edim, so then you're right. Is it halachically an asiya or not? Are Bezdin acting within their, you know, authorized role as a Bezdin or not? You're 100% right. But forget about that, says Reb Chaim. Now we're talking about velo kasher asa in a different context. We're talking about velo kasher we're talking about the asiya here from the context of the mechayev itself. Is there reason to be mechayev the edim? And if they schemed but didn't achieve, that's one thing. If they schemed and they did achieve, it's something else. Okay, Rav Ofer, let's go on, because, you know, time is of the essence, and any questions that you have, please, I beg you to hold on to them, because... Okay, just hold on to your comments. I'm sorry I said questions, I meant to say comments. Okay, now I'm asking you, please, to turn to page 30. On page 30, we have a Rama Mehilchus Macholas Asuras. Okay, if you can hold on to your comments for just 10 more minutes, I can have, instead of a chatzi shir, which is not a melechus machshavas, I want to have a full shir. And again, I'm trying desperately to prove that Reb Chaim also operates with these concepts, if not with the language. Okay. The Rambam wants to know, what's the law of a bird, and we cannot recognize the bird? If we recognize the bird, we know whether it belongs to a kosher species or a non-kosher species. But we don't recognize the bird. So what do? We have something called simanei ha'of. What are the simanei ha'of? So the Mishnah in Chulin lists four simanei ha'of. Okay? One of them is called Etzba Yisera, the other is called Zefek or Morah, and the third is called Kirkavono Miklaf Biyad, and the fourth is called Eino Doris. Those are the four Simone Of, Kashus the Of. The Rambam writes the following. We look at this bird, this anonymous, unidentified bird, and lo and behold, it's Eino Doris V'Ochel. Eino Doris V'Ochel. I don't think that's mine in this case. No. Harvey, I think your wife is trying to get a hold of you. This is becoming a daily occurrence. I always know it's his wife who's calling him, and she's great, his wife. She always calls in the middle of shiur. Yeah. And I would love to tell Harvey to take off his phone before shiur, but that I can't do. So we get a little extra music, musical background, and we have to take in Besimcha Gedolah. Okay, then? So what happens now? I don't know if you can hear my voice. I'm going to try to scream and see if you can hear me. Okay, so we determined about this oath that it's an Eino Doris V'Ochel.
Okay,
that's good. It's an Eino Doris V'Ochel. That means we're one out of four. Then the Rambam says, in such a case, in Yeshbo Echad Mishlosha Simonim Elu. Okay, there's a little bit of a confusion here whether it's Echad Mishlosha Simonim or Shnaya Mishlosha Simonim. That's going to be a complicated sugya in Chulin, which I don't want to get into in the 5 minutes that we have to finish this up. So it's either one or two, but not all three, right? Hareza of Tahar. V'eluhen, and which of the three simonim do you have to add to Eino Dores V'yochel? It's either Etzpa, Zefek, or Kurkavona. Fine. Why is that enough? I mean, after all, the Rambam has to admit you don't have the other simoni kashrus. Lefisha ein b'chol elu aminim ha'asurim. If you go through all the categories that are delineated in Parshas Shmini, if I'm right, Mitch, am I on target there? I think it's in Parshas Shmini. Then you'll see that none of those non-kosher birds have this combination of Eino Dores plus one of the other Simonim, Chutzmi HaPeres VaHaznia. Okay, I need an English translation for that, but whatever those birds are.
Ostriches.
Okay, ostriches, whatever they are. Those are the only two species of birds on the face of the earth which are Eino Dores and have one of the other three Simonim. The Einam Mitsuyim B'Yishuv. We don't have to worry that maybe the bird that we found in the Yishuv is an Osnia Uperis. Those birds are not to be found. So now, what I want to do here is, and maybe this is not legitimate, but I want to point out one in this gigantic Reb Chaim, which is very complicated. I want to zoom in on one particular point. And that is the paragraph that starts Ulam, which is the last paragraph in this piece of Reb Chaim. He asks the following. The Rambam says that if you have these two simoni, meaning one of the three simoni kashrus plus Eino Dores, then that's enough to determine that it's an oftar because it's not Osni on Peres, those are Eino Mitsuyim. But Mishnah Senu, but the Mishnah in Chulin on Daf Samach Aleph, Tnan, it says explicitly that when is the oaf an oaf tahar? Kol sheyeshlo etzba, zefek, and korkavon, meaning that you need all three simonim. Vikasha, if according to the Rambam, all you need is one simon plus Eino Dores can link up with any one of the other three simonim and establish that it's kosher because we're not worried about Osnio Peres. Is kashim kain lamali tlas? Well, why does the Mishnah say you need three? Right? Betray minayu sagi. Betray minayu, I assume right now means Eino Dores plus one of the others. Vitzarech iun. So again, I'm going to fast forward. He says the following. Nira, this is on page 31, line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, line 7. Nira, the Hanach Dalid Simonim, you know, we joined together the four Simonim as if they were all made of one piece of leather, you know, Miksha Achas. Trey Dinim Bahu. They're really should be divided into two distinct categories. Da shlosha simonim shebegufo, the three obvious simonim, the etzba and the zefek and the kurkavon. Yesodom, how do we define them conceptually? Chalos din simon tara.
They already have a simon tara.
Oh. However, he says, I'm fast forwarding a little bit, ubi eino dores. Right, that was the last one on the list. Hurak chisaron din simon tuma. It's not that because the bird is not a dores, that itself is a simon tara, but the fact that the bird is not a dores, it doesn't pounce on its prey, that means you don't have a simon tuma. So the Rambam now says the following. What I need to establish that this bird that's here on the table is kosher is I need one. I got to prove that it's not tamei. How do I prove that it's not tamei? It's not a dores. But that's not enough. You're only establishing the absence of a simon tumah. Okay, so you're telling me that it doesn't have a simon tumah. But now it's in this twilight zone. And I need, in addition to the absence of a Siman Tumah, what else do I need? A Siman Tara. Aval din Siman Tara dayin lesbe. Oh, he says, that's what it means, that according to the Rambam, you don't need all three Siman Tara. You only need one Siman Tara in order to be, in order to establish, to generate a Chal Shem, a Tahora on this bird. Aye, the Mishnah says, Amru Chachamim, Einbo, Etzba, Yisayr, that's only because the Mishnah is listing the various Simone Tahara. And there are, in fact, three Simone Tahara. But the Mishnah is not telling you that in all situations you need all three Simone Tahara. The Mishnah is only telling you what your options are for Simone Tahara. And there, I'm skipping a little bit again. Ulefi Zeh, Miyushav Heitim, fine. Pasak Rambam, what's it called? Peres Oznia, what was it called? Yeah, Peres V'Oznia, Ispahu Chad Simon Shebegufo. Each of them, of the two of them, has one of the Simoni Tahara, V'Gamenim Dorsim, and they don't have the Simon Tuma. So what's unique about these two species of birds is that they really live up to what normally would have been enough evidence to establish the kashrus of the bird. And therefore, if I have an unidentified bird and it has, number one, absent is the Doris, and number two, it has one of the Simone Tara, then I have to worry that maybe it's Osnia or Peres. So the Rambam says, but they're not around, right? We don't find them. And therefore he says, "Hos the eno dores in sheismani tar biachad, less of the chola ofos tmein." But you'll never find an of tame that on the one end is an eno dores, and at the same time it has one or two, whatever it is, there the simani taro. Is haremish nasedu hilchas aktani di elu shlosha simanim heim. These are the simani tahara. But what the Rambam is telling you is that all you need is one siman tara to generate the tahara of the bird, as long as it doesn't have a Simon Tuma. Ah, you'll tell me the Peres V'Oznia, they have also this description. They are lacking in Dores V'Ochel, and they have one or the other of the Simoni Tahara, says Reb Chaim, that you're right. But beyond those two species, there's no other species on the face of the earth of a bird that has the absence of Dores V'Ochel and has one of the Simone Tara, except for these two birds. So I've excluded all the other birds that are Tmeim, and therefore by passive elimination I assume that this is an Ov Tar. But Rabosai, why am I studying this with you today? I think this would be another proof, perhaps, that Reb Chaim is operating with positive and negative. And he's saying the following. There's something called the Siman Tahara, and then there's something called the absence of a Siman Tuma. The first is Chiyuvi, and the second is Shlili. Again, Reb Chaim would refuse to use those terms because that's philosophical jargon which he doesn't want to use. But logically, he is applying that logic, and he's saying that, okay, you've excluded a Siman Tuma because it's Ein Adores, but you don't have a positive Siman Tahara. Now the last thing, which we don't have time for today, I don't know if anybody has time over the course of the next few days, is the previous Reb Chaim, which is the last Reb Chaim in Isurei Bir. Now, I just want to point out to you, this is a gigantic, what word am I looking, it's a massive Reb Chaim, and we don't have time to do this, but what I would like to point out to you is that if you open up to page 29, which is Perek Yitzayim Ilchus Yisur Ebi Alocha Beis, if you plow through the first paragraph very carefully, and Reb Chaim gives you a clear-cut appreciation of the Ravid's objection, the Ravid's Hasog on the Rambam, and leaves it as a Tzorach Iyun at the end of this paragraph, how to defend the Rambam, and then you fast forward to the beginning of the paragraph Vehine, which is on page Lamed. I can't call it page 30 because page 30 is on the other side of the page. And if you just read the first few lines of that paragraph, and then fast forward to Ulefi Hamavur, the trade Dinimhem, which is a longer paragraph that goes on to page 30, then I think you'll get enough of this Reb Chaim to again try to prove that Reb Chaim operates within the framework of the absence of something and a positive chiyuvi dimension. So again, as we started here with Reb Bloch, in the case of a lav sheibo maisa and an essay sheyeshbo maisa, and then we went to the Reb Chaim in Hilchas Edus, the difference between the absence of a kasher zomam or the asa as a positive poter, and then we have the Reb Chaim in Hilchas Machlos Asuris about the difference between the absence of a siman tuma and the positive establishment or existence of a siman tara, then I think you can go back to the page 53 of Rav Zevin, bottom paragraph, and now gain a new appreciation for what Rav Zevin is trying to argue here, that even though Rav Chaim doesn't utilize the language of what he calls milotai higayon in philosophical terms, and you won't find chiyuvi and shlili in Rav Chaim, but nevertheless you do find the concepts and the modus operandi of making that distinction. Now, on page 54, which if you'd like we should photocopy if somebody could offer, there he talks about another classical philosophical distinction between Siba and Mesovev. The one who actually historically made a whole parnasa out of it was Rav Amiel in his Sefer Amidot L'Cheker Halacha, which Rav Zevin is totally unaware of. But as far as Rav Chaim is concerned, since Siba u Mesovev, cause and effect, are classical philosophical jargon that don't appear, this terminology will not appear in Shas Bavli or Yushalmi, therefore Reb Chaim avoids it like the plague. But once again, Reb Zevin is going to insist that although Reb Chaim avoided Sibo Misovev, he uses it more often than we might think. And I would like to study with you, Sibo Misovev. I think we should open up the Rugachev again, because he uses Siba Mesovev, and my text for the Rugachev is Rav Menachem Kasher, you know, the Mefaneach Tzfunos. And we should open up the Midot L'Cheker Halacha, which is one of the few books that I actually do possess, and I know where it is. And then maybe come back to this piece on Rav Chaim and Rav Zevin and see whether we could somehow define the lines of demarcation between Reb Chaim on the one hand and the others in terms of this distinction between Siba and Mesovev. The confusing part to me is that Reb Elchanan, who was an absolute Talmud, you know, in the sense of the Derech of Reb Chaim, he uses something called Maisa V'Totzas HaMaisa, and we discussed this in the past. That also is really Sibo Mesovev. You know, is it the Sibo, the action, or is it the state of being that results from the action? And this is something very common in Reb Elchanan. I don't know why Reb Zevin seems to be oblivious to that. In other words, if Reb Zevin is looking for examples in Reb Chaim for the distinction between Siba Mesovev, then I think the classical area would be Maisa V'Totzah HaMaisa.
Is this literally cause and effect?
Cause and effect. So if I'm talking about the Maisa, I'm focused on the cause. If I'm talking about the Totzah HaMaisa, I'm talking about the effect, otherwise known as Siba Mesovev. So for example, in Hilchas Shabbos, we're going to have a long discussion about writing with your left hand. That as far as the Mesovev is concerned, as far as the Totzah HaMaisa, you have a Ksav. But the Sokachava, the Avnei Nezer, says that that's not enough. In Shabbos, you need the Maisa. And that's not called a Maisa if you did it in a strange sort of a way. That's going to lead us to a whole discussion about Chok Tochis, where instead of making letters, he knocks down, he depresses the ground.
Space. What? The in-between space.
No, what he does is, let's say he wants to write a vase, so what he does is he depresses the ground, or whatever it might be, the stone, until finally, as a result of that depression, which is called toch, he gets a letter. Now, he didn't create that letter. The letter sort of
created itself. And that's the sculpture.
So is that called a maisa for Shabbos, or do we just emphasize the totsasa maisa? And we say that at the end he has a ksav, and that's going to be the run in Perek HaBonah. So that this concept of Siba Mesovev, I don't know why Rav Zevin is so hard pressed in order to justify his conclusion that Rav Chaim operates with Siba Mesovev. He quotes the most complicated Rav Chaim in the whole Sefer, you know, the Rav Chaim in the beginning of Yisurei Bia, which is extremely complicated, about Psulei Kol. I don't know why he needs that. There are so many myriads of examples of Siba Mesovev, and Rav Chaim, you know, certainly operates with that. Okay, Rabosai, I think we'll stop here, and I thank you for joining me today.